Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a very special guest today, you guys. My friend Andy Linton is here to join us. They just had a huge roast for him down at Palm Springs that was very fun. And Andy's been on the podcast. I know you guys have heard him. We've had him. He's talked to us other times. But this is the first time that Andy and I get to sit down, just two of us. Happy New Year from everyone at Trupanion. As breeders, the start of a new year is the perfect time to set resolutions that prioritize what matters most, your puppies and their future. Unexpected accidents and illnesses can happen at any time, but you can ensure your litters and their new families are prepared for whatever comes their way with Trupanion's exclusive 30-day go-home offer. By joining Trupanion's free breeder support program, you can send your puppies home with their own special go-home offer, giving them immediate medical insurance coverage and protecting them from the moment they leave your care. This year, resolve to give yourself and your puppy buyers the ultimate gift of peace of mind as a member of Trupanion's breeder support program. Just stop by the Pure Dog Talk website, puredogtalk.com, go to the partners page and click the link there. That will let you sign up today and make 2026 the year of happy, healthy pups. Get ready to join us in beautiful Austin, Texas, March 27 to 29 for Pure Dog Talk's Pedigrees to Pups Seminar Weekend with your host, yours truly, teaming up with Dr. Marty Greer. Marty and I have both presented at AKC's Breeder Symposiums and to national audiences around the country. This joint seminar combines a discussion of pedigrees and building a breeding program with down-to-earth veterinary tips on healthy whelping and raising a new litter. We have purposely built a breeding theory and breeding hands-on seminar that creates an all-inclusive understanding of both the art and science of dog breeding. Our goal is full-circle mentoring experience in a small group format that creates community and creates opportunities for conversation and connection. Topics cover everything from the foundation bitch, basic health and structure, reading pedigrees, to progesterone timing, semen evaluation, neonates, and a whole lot more. So check out the events tab at puredogtalk.com for more information. Welcome, Andy. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing real well, Laura. Thanks.
Excellent. Excellent. So Andy, give us the 411. Give us your background, how you got started in this wonderful, wonderful world of purebred dogs.
Well, a friend of my mom's, when I was about 13, 14 years old, gave us a Doberman. Yeah. And he said, this is a show quality Doberman. And of course, at the time, all I cared about was surfing and playing tennis. And I thought, dog show, that just sounded ridiculous to me, which it may still be, frankly, but I don't know. But anyway, they talked me into going to a dog show, and I made the rounds at the puppy matches like everybody seemed to in Southern California back then.
Yeah.
And kind of got hooked on it. And I showed my first dog at Beverly Hills Kennel Club in 1974.
Oh, wow.
A Doberman bitch that I owned and showed her in novice class. I had t-shirt, jeans, logging chain for equipment. I got second out of two. It was not A Star Is Born.
And I've seen pictures of you from then, and you had this like serious surfer dude look going on, right?
Long hair. Oh, it was a lot longer. You never saw pictures of me then. It was a lot longer in 1974.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, that's going to be a request. I'm going to request that you send me one of those pictures for the podcast to put up on the website, because I got to see it, man.
No, I
Oh,
don't think you want to see it.
so of course we do. So you went from logging chain and not your best start, and you went a long way. So how did you get from point A to point B?
Well, I started out working for a couple of local handlers. For some reason, I became interested and started going to dog shows. And I thought, I don't have any way to get there. Didn't have a car at the time. So I started working for handlers and going to the dog shows. And the bug just bit me. And I just became excited about it and wanted to learn more. Once I could drive to dog shows, I'd spend all weekends going to dog shows. And I'd watch the best handlers and saw who was winning. And then I decided I want to maybe do that. So I thought I still have a lot to learn. I ended up helping Clay on weekends for quite a while. And I didn't really want to learn the kennel business so much. I figured I knew how to pick up poop pretty well by then. But I learned a lot from Clay because he knew pretty much everything about every breed, it seemed like. How to trim them, how to show them the essence of the breeds. And that was a good training session for me. So I did that. And then people started asking me to show their dogs. And I did that for a while. Got my first client with a Whippet. It was a dog that Mary Dukes bred. That was my first best in show dog. But soon after that, I wondered, do I really want to do this? And I quit going to dog shows and went to college for a couple of years. Came to that fork in the road that said, do I want to be an attorney or go back to being a dog handler? I chose dog handler and I've never looked back. I had incredible goals though when I came back after going to school. Some people might think it was a little arrogant to dream like this, but I'm a firm believer in if you can't dream it, you can't do it. And I dreamt about having the top dog of all breeds and winning Westminster. And within probably 5 years of coming back and making those goals, it had happened. So, like I said, if you can dream it, you can do it.
I tell you what, Andy, I think that we're going to have to dive into how you made that happen, because a lot of us dream it. Most of us don't do it. And so talk about the work, talk about the effort, talk about the commitment, talk about what got you from dreaming a dream to accomplishing the dream in 5 years.
The basis for all of success and winning at dog shows is, of course, the dog. You have to have the right dog. You cannot win the race without the horse. And then I've always subscribed to this theory. There's three things involved with winning: quality, condition, and presentation. If all three are the best, you're going to win the most. So instead of crying foul when you lose, examine those three things. If any one of those three things are lacking, or there's a chink in the armor, you can lose, even if two of the things you've got going for you are better than the competition. I've always subscribed to the theory, self-reflect and try to make yourself better, work harder, and don't complain about losing. Do something about it.
I have heard you talk about the condition, the presentation, and the quality on Pure Dog Talk before on one of our Friday night forums, I think, back in the day. And I think it's so on point. So let's break it down, right? Let's take each one of those pieces and talk about what do you do if you're at the bottom of the hill and you want to get to the top of the hill. Take each one of those three and talk about the steps that you can take to move up the hill.
Well, if you're fortunate enough to have a choice of great dogs, some people fall into it, some people find it, some people buy it. There's a lot of ways of getting that competitive dog that can put you into the game. For me, I kind of just lucked out with my first big winner, Indy, who won Best in Show at Westminster. Bill Shelton was showing her in the classes. And he was showing for Sylvia Hammarstrom, specialing giant schnauzers for her. he couldn't take her in the group. So they ended up hiring me, and you know, the rest became history. So I just lucked into that one. I thought she was a great dog, but I didn't see myself showing her until Bill couldn't show her. I mean, Bill would have probably done the same thing I did, no doubt.
That is fast. I did not know that Bill started Indy. That is a cool piece of that story. And so take that and now add the conditioning layer.
Well, I've always given this analogy. If you have a dog that's a 5 on a scale of 10, just an average run-of-the-mill dog, that dog's quality is a 5 for everybody to see. Presented perfectly and conditioned perfectly. And if it needs, you know, if it's a poodle, trimmed perfectly, for example, that 5 can appear to be a 7 for a couple of minutes in front of a judge. That 5 can also appear to be a 3, not conditioned, not presented properly. So you could have the same dog that's a 5 on the scale of 10, look like a 7 or a 3 or anywhere in between. But that same 5 could easily beat itself by a mile, handled differently and trimmed differently, presented differently. So my point is all three things matter. And I sometimes hear people complaining, but I watch them show their dog and I think your dog could up its game a little bit if you just worked a little harder and worked on the presentation and conditioning.
100%. Conditioning is something I talk to people a lot about. And I think, you know, they're like, well, I ride it by a bicycle. Well, okay, that's a good start. What are some of your personal favorite insider knowledge tips on physical condition? We'll start with physical. We'll not worry about coat just yet. Start with physical conditioning.
Well, I used to be a big believer in road work and all that. I'm not as big a believer in that now. Now I believe if a dog is a little longer and has a little softer top line, it needs to do more galloping, strengthen its midsection. If it's shorter backed and doesn't need as much, it doesn't need as much. Mm-hmm. You may not want to bulk it up so much.
Yeah.
So there's every dog is different, but I like dogs to just free run and be dogs for the most part. And I know there's a lot of training theories and conditioning theories out there, but I don't have anything really tricky. It's like keep the dog happy, healthy, fit, fed well, and then make the showing part fun for them. And you'll probably do all right.
Everybody does. You've got a schedule, right? Like you're at the dog show from Thursday to Sunday. Monday, you lie in bed and suck your thumb. And Tuesday, you start back to work, right? Talk
Pretty
us
much.
Through that.
Well, anymore, I only keep a couple of dogs at my house.
Yeah.
So it's a whole different thing than it used to be when I showed 25 or 30 dogs at a dog show. It used to be around the clock, work all the time, had to trim dogs, take care of dogs, condition dogs. I can't even imagine doing that. That was a lifetime ago.
It's true.
But it's hard work when you're doing that. And if you're serious about it and intense about it, you pay your dues when you're doing that.
We've both done it. I think that one of the most amazing things. I used to teach all of my assistants. They were supposed to go watch a handler, right? Just go pick a dog handler, follow them around and watch them, stalk them. I used to have them stalk you, Taffy, certain people. And so one of the gifts that you have and that you bring to the dog sport is your quiet hands with your dogs. Can you elaborate on that? Kind of the mind work and the physical work that you did over your time of learning to turn out a dog that barely has to be touched?
Well, there's a few simple basic rules for free baiting a dog, if we're talking about that. And that's the way I like to show a dog. I like the thought of painting the picture with the dog, doing it itself. And keeping in mind, a dog always looks better if they're in the backyard looking at a cat than they do if you're propping them up, twisting legs and breaking necks. So there's just a few little training tips about free stacking a dog that I probably couldn't show you right now, but It's pretty basic. But the main thing is the overall theory that I subscribe to is trust the dog, teach it a few basic, simple commands, and keep it simple. When I'm showing a dog, I try to have the attitude, my mindset is not, I got to win this or get super intense, but I'm in the kitchen making a sandwich, and whatever dog I'm showing, what would they be doing if they're in the kitchen while I was making a sandwich? It'd be looking at me, eager to please, trying to get my attention, trying to focus on what I'm doing. And so I developed that mindset in the ring. And that's why dogs rarely burn out. Well, never burn out. I've not had a dog burn out, so to speak. But when dogs aren't having fun, they're going to quit. And so I just try to always make them have fun while we're doing our stuff in the ring.
I love that. I completely love the standing in your kitchen making a sandwich. Vision is perfect. And the other thing that I noticed over, 30 plus years of watching you and competing against you, frequently losing to you.
Now.
I know, it's true. It's true. I mean, we went head to head a lot. But the things that you would do that were so freaking smart, like, how did he even think to do that? Like, I will never forget, this is just one example. We're in Gig Harbor in a downpour. I mean, buckets, pissing down, downpour. And we were in the hound group, and you had the Ridgeback, I'm pretty sure, and I had the Wolfhound or something. I don't know. Anyway, everybody else is trying to keep their dog dry and doing all this stuff and fussing and farting around. Here comes Andy, just very casually strolling up from wherever you'd been hiding, three tenths away, to walk up and present your dog just calm as a cucumber, like without a drop of rain on it. I have no idea how you did to this day. I have no idea. So talk about those little teeny tiny that seem minuscule but make a big impact.
Well, it's always the details and paying attention and basically trying to keep your dog focused on what he's supposed to be focused on. And you do that by, I remember Jimmy Moses said to me one time when I was younger, he said, you're always trying to trick these dogs into thinking they're doing what they want to do when you're getting them to do what you want them to do. And there's an art to it for sure. And I'm certainly not the best at it, but I've watched enough
people. I don't know. I think you actually are the best at it. Sorry. Sorry. I'm going to fight you on that one. I think you're the best. I didn't start early enough to see a lot of the really great ones, but of our era, you truly are the most gifted at that just small movement that is exactly what you need at exactly the right time. And I love the thought of just keeping the dog focused and paying attention to the detail.
Well, it's a lot about situation and timing and being in the right spot at the right time with the right look, with the right angle, knowing a judge cares about fronts or cares about, you know, expression. With experience, you tend to learn these things about judges, and you always want to sell the positive and not concern yourself with so much hiding the negative. And basically, that's obviously what you're doing is selling your dog to the judge for a couple of minutes at a time. But I always like to tell people, don't just try to fake out a judge. Try to have some integrity and dignity with it, too, because you have to show to these judges. You have to show to these judges for years if you're going to do this as a career. So you can't be trying to fool them. You just want to present your dog in the best light and then let them make their decision. And hopefully it goes your way.
All we can do is the best we can do, right, Andy?
Absolutely.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, you guys, be sure to watch the 150th Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show presented by Purina Pro Plan, February 2nd to 3rd from Madison Square Garden in New York City. The sesquicentennial celebration featuring 2,500 champions representing 202 eligible AKC breeds will feature many special presentations and appearances. The longest nationally televised live dog show will air on FS1 from 7:30 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, February 2nd, with the pre-show beginning at 7 p.m. Group judging of the sporting, working, and terrier groups, followed by Best in Show, will air on FS1 from 7:30 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, February 3rd, with Junior Showmanship Finals at 7 p.m. Purina Pro Plan, the exclusive pet food sponsor of the Westminster Dog Show since 2012, is very proud that the owners and handlers of 18 of the past 19 Best in Show winners have chosen Pro Plan. To learn more about the high-performance nutrition of Pro Plan, go to purina.com/proplan/dogs. Like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk is here for you to make sense out of everyday things, to add nuance to your understanding and tools to your tech box, to bring history to life and propel the living history of purebred dogs into the future. So, serious observation. What do you guys think I hear more often than crooked judges and professional handlers win everything? I hear a continuing cry for community. So, for folks who are looking to have meaningful conversation, avoid keyboard warriors, and join a welcoming and knowledgeable group, we offer you an option. Forget about spilling the tea. Drink from a well of thoughtful and thought-provoking dog people. Pure Dog Talk patrons support the work we do here by contributing to our crowdsourcing campaign. For as little as $10 a month, you can keep the MP3s rolling here at Pure Dog Talk. You can contribute to the future of purebred dogs by building the fortunes of the Marty and Laura Show. You can gain access to a private Facebook group, private After Dark Zoom room, and private Laura Unleashed podcast episodes. Even your own Pure Dog Talk digital badge. Visit puredogtalk.com/patron to find out how you can join the best community in dogs. So talk about... I had you on the podcast really early on in Podcastlandia, and for listeners out there, I'll put a link to this in the show notes because it was such a fantastic conversation with Andy and Valerie and Bill talking about their times at winning Best in Show at the Garden. Talk about, the Garden's coming up, we're in the midst of it. What is your top three suggestions for people going into that hot and heavy competition? Stay focused, stay on top of it. What's your tips?
Treat it like a puppy match. Take the intensity level way down. You want to keep your blood pressure down, keep your heart rate down so you can make sound, good decisions. And go watch the judge a little bit before it's your turn. Learn what to expect from the judge. You know, just be prepared. Have your dog trained. Properly trimmed, groomed, exercised, just the basic stuff that you would do at any other dog show. Just take the pressure off of yourself and go in there and have a good time and just be very alert. You know, a word that I always use when I'm talking to people about how to handle dogs is awareness. Mm-hmm. And having a great sense of awareness is vitally important. If you get too much tunnel vision in one aspect of showing your dog, you know, you might lose it on something else. So you have to be aware that if you have a nervous dog, there's somebody over there stacking chairs. You have to be aware of that sort of thing. And if you see a judge change procedure, be aware of it. Don't be caught not paying attention.
Daydreaming.
Yeah.
I like it. Situational awareness. Very important. You've had a long career with lots and lots and lots and lots of breeds, primarily Dobermans, obviously. You weren't as much involved with hands-on breeding as you were with guiding breeding programs. So talk about that relationship, that partnership, working with your clients, working with the breeding programs, what you brought, what they brought, all that kind of stuff.
I've probably only raised 5 litters in my life, and that was not by myself, any one of the 5. But as far as giving advice and having it followed about doing breedings, that's been countless times. And I've had to talk clients into breeding to dogs when they hated the owners, they hated each other. And I've always subscribed to the theory, don't mix dogs and people when you're breeding. But it's interesting when you've done it for a long time, which you've done the same thing. You've seen generational transformations of different breeds.
Yep.
And you know, the one they're talking about that's so great, you remember seeing him and he wasn't that great, or maybe he was that great. It adds value to breeders to pick your brain when you're somebody that's maybe seen the dog 4 generations back live. But I always enjoy mixing and matching dogs and playing the breeding game, having an opinion like we all do. Yeah. And I think by proxy, I've bred quite a few dogs.
What's your favorite? I know you have a story. What is your favorite? You told the client to do the breeding and they didn't want to, and they did it anyway, and it made a big winner. You've got to have one of those, or many.
There was a Whippet situation where my client absolutely did not want to breed to this other gal's dog. And I thought it was the dream breeding. She said, absolutely not. Well, I don't normally twist anybody's arm, but I twisted her arm into doing this breeding and created litter with, I don't know, 4 group winners.
Oh, wow.
And created one of the top sires.
Nice.
That's one I'm most proud of, probably, but I'm not going to mention any names here.
No, we're not throwing anybody under the bus, but I'm saying we've all done it as handlers. We see because you've seen the dogs and we can offer insight. And I think that that is sort of a, I don't know if it's unspoken, right, or unrecognized thing. I mean, we have friends, Bill, Gabriel, all these people that, you know, they are actively hands-on breeding their dogs. But a lot of us are doing more with different breeds and different people. And so I just wanted to kind of touch on that a little bit, because I think it gets lost in translation. So
I've never been able to understand as a handler how, when you're going to dog shows every weekend, how you can even have a litter. So I've never figured that angle out.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't get involved.
It was a struggle. I did it 1 litter a year between November and January. Doesn't get you as far down the road as you might hope it would. But, you know, it was better than not having anything. All right. So I don't want to dive too deep into it, but I know you have announced to people that you're having some health issues and that you're kind of winding up your handling career. What are your future plans?
Well, I'm going to try to get through the garden in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
And then see what happens there. And I was actually diagnosed a couple of years ago, and I really never wanted to tell anybody about it. But it became obvious. So people are saying, hey, is your back sore? And so I figured, what the heck? Who cares?
You were diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, right?
With Parkinson's, yeah. So I also thought to myself, if I can stay busy, it's probably better for my health than going sitting down in a recliner chair and watch TV all day.
Yes, I can speak correctly.
Yeah, so I really just try to stay busy, stay on my feet all day. Don't lounge around too much. And I love the dog shows. I mean, what other job can you play with dogs and socialize all day at the dog show and travel and have some friendly competition? I mean, it ticks all the boxes for me. So
much better than being a lawyer.
For sure. I intend to try to go through the end of 2026. There's a couple of dogs that I'm showing that are just kind of starting out that I'd like to have some success with them and see where it goes. But I'm not planning on quitting till the end of 26 this year.
All right. Well, that's important because people got stuff to learn yet. And all y'all out there, if you're going to learn, learn from the best. I mean, you can learn from Pure Dog Talk. You can learn from a lot of places, but watching Andy do Andy things is definitely a lot of how I learned. It's how a lot of people I know learned. So that is...
Well, that's very kind of you.
It's true. It's true. There's a lot of people that I watched when I was coming up. And, you know, I'm not all that far behind you, but it is.
Oh, you're way behind me. Are you kidding? You're a mere child.
Oh, sweetie, no. No, no. No, I think I'm less than 10 years behind you. But yeah, it is a thing. And I think that the best things I ever learned, nobody told me. I just learned them by watching what people were doing. And
sure.
I think, you know, you had Clay, you had other people in your life. I had some of it, but mostly a lot of us, we just learn by watching. And
you mentioned that. I have to admit, I'm one of the luckiest people I know at dog shows, in the sense that good fortune to run across good dogs, good fortune to run across good clients. And most importantly, I had mentors. I mean, some of the best dog people ever were very kind to me and generous with their knowledge and opinions. And they kind of took me under their wing, quite a few of them. I am very lucky to have been taken under so many smart, talented people's wings.
Well, Clay got you started. You could name a couple others. Who else you got? Mo? How about Mo?
Pat Trotter. Mm-hmm. And Annie. I idolized watching Bob and Jane.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I grew up watching Corky show dogs and Tim Brazier. I learned so much watching Tim.
Yes.
About style and how to be a good sport. But I mean, I stole from everybody.
Didn't we all?
I stole from everybody. Yeah, we did. I mean, if we're smart, we did.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was a question of, well, why did Taffy move this dog's leg this way? Oh, as I watch it change balance and change how it's standing. Why did Andy do this with this dog with its neck? Oh, okay. And see, now the ears are better. Right. So it's all of that. It's not just the watching. It's the applying what you're seeing to the results that someone's getting. It's that piece that I think is so important.
Absolutely. You know, I'd like to take a second to just thank the whole dog show community. People have been so nice to me. It's almost unrealistic to think that so many people could be so nice.
You know what? This isn't our sport. It's family, Andy. You know that.
Yeah. But the dog show community has been so kind to me. And there's no way I could ever repay everybody. And I'm truly grateful and thankful. Sorry to lose it.
No, you're good. I do this on a regular basis. People are used to it. So I tell you what, Andy, you have repaid us all over the course of the last 40 some odd years with your grace and showing us how to do it right. True story.
Well, thanks. But you know, that roast you mentioned, I mean, who thinks up to do that for me?
Just super kind. I think it was probably Valerie, friends. If I had to guess.
Oh, I know who did it, and they're such good friends. And then for people to be so kind and send in videos and do all that stuff and show up, it literally overwhelmed me to the point of I couldn't speak. Yeah. And I would just like, you know, there was no thinking politics, religion, gay, straight, black, white. It was just everybody was in kind mode. And I wish we could all just stay in kind mode.
Oh, Andy's wish from your lips to God's ears, my friend. Let us all aim for staying in kind mode. It is a much better place to live.
Really is.
It is. All right, my friend. I thank you so much for your time. I thank you so much for your wisdom. And I wish you the best.
Thanks for having me. And thanks to everybody out there for being so nice.
All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life. You know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.